hosts Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, founders of the Navit Money app, the money management app that uses behavioral science to foster financial wellness.
On this episode of the Navit podcast, we dive into the fascinating world of financial therapy with financial therapist Wendy Wright. Wendy's passionate about helping people find freedom and balance in their relationship with money. And as a member of the Financial Therapy Association, she's able to provide a unique level of support for you to decrease fear, anxiety, and reactivity in your money life. Also, as a certified intuitive eating counselor, a certified eating disorder specialist and supervisor, she's also helped individuals and families find and experience freedom with food and their bodies. It is this intuitive mindset that can also impact your relationship with all things money. We know you'll enjoy this episode. Let us know what you think by dropping us a line or a comment wherever you're listening in from. Wendy, welcome to our show. We're so thrilled to have you joining us today. And, you know, to get started, as we like to with every guest, we'd love to give you a chance to tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and what you do as a financial therapist.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a little bit nerdy about talking about money and financial therapy. I love it. So I'm always excited
to have... Found the right people.
Yes. So excited. I have two adult sons. And as you might imagine, sometimes I'll say, hey, do y'all want to talk about money? And they just roll their eyes at me. So I love finding an audience that wants to talk about money. And especially financial therapy. It is so new that I'm imagining that a lot of people listening right now are actually going, what is a financial therapist? And we want to answer that today because it is a very, very new and game-changing part of your financial team of who's here to help you with your relationship with money. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I am based out of Denver, but I work with people across the country and even in other countries as well, because there's not many people who are trained and do what I do when it comes to therapy, to really have this safe and completely judgment-free zone to talk about all things about money.
I mean, I know Aaron and I. Aaron's there, by the way. She's not on mute. Hey, Aaron. I know we are so excited to dive into this topic with you, especially. And it's really interesting, your background. I mean, by way of that being your kind of path to study, how did you land on a focus on finance? I can certainly assume, given the conversations around marriage and other life events that you are starting to have with your clients. And but I'd love to hear how you landed on financial therapy.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a cool, fun story because I started out years ago, my undergrad was in business, marketing and computer information systems, actually. And then I became a marriage and family therapist about 10 years after that. And so I have a really varied background. I like to tell, especially people who are feeling stuck in their career, if I'm working with them, I'm like, this is my sixth career. So just move forward and build your life accordingly. I started out as a mortgage banker. I've been a realtor. I flipped houses before the crash of whenever that was. I've worked in human resources and business development. Then as a therapist, I was doing kind of general therapy, and then I specialized in eating disorders. This is all training together. And my specialty in eating disorders began, I think, because I had the business background, because I had the mortgage loan officer, you know, I'd sat with people and they, you know, unveiled themselves financially there, did that for years. I was just attuned to money. And I think I also have a comfort level that a lot of therapists, frankly, don't have. And I'm not talking about them behind their back because I think they would raise their hand and say, yes, please don't talk about money with me. So because I work with therapists a lot on their own money story and setting up their private practice and things like that, too. So as I was sitting with my eating disorder clients, I began to notice this parallel, very interesting relationship as they moved out of eating disorder stuff, behaviors, they began to shift into often, or begin to talk about some money behaviors. So I actually call this the intersection of money and milkshakes. I talk about it, speak on it often, and I'm writing a journal workbook exercise right now that'll be ready in June of this year. So sign up for my email list if you want to be notified when that's ready to go. And I'm sure we can work out some kind of a coupon for your listeners too. But it was really interesting because just to oversimplify it, if they were using their eating disorder thinking, I must be thin in order to be accepted, in order to achieve whatever, they would shift that into, I need to buy this shirt in order to be thin, in order to be accepted into whatever. Or, you know, like they were just the same sentences used. Or if they were highly rigid, they tended to be highly rigid with their money. So I started noticing this parallel. I'm like, I literally was Googling, has anyone else noticed this before? And not a lot of people have. So I love to speak on it. I love to talk about it. And then I began to uncover, yes, there is definitely an emotional connection, money and emotions. There's a connection there. Yes, raise your hands. Mm-hmm. Yes, we love that. And that there were some people starting to use the term financial therapist. Barbara Sandy Houston is one of the first people to start to really use that term. Barry Tesler, who wrote The Art of Money, which is one of my top recommendations, mm-hmm. place to start for clients. And it's actually like how I like to pick if my clients are looking for a financial planner or advisor, which is very different than a financial therapist. I say, first, ask them if they read The Art of Money. And because that tells you they already kind of get this emotional connection. But then, so as I began to see that, when I moved into private practice several years ago, I knew this is what I wanted to focus on. So my private practice now is financial therapy focused. I'm a member of the Financial Therapy Association, and I work with people on what I try to say over and over and over again is we want to approach their money story with abundant, compassionate curiosity and zero judgment. That is the ultimate game changer, abundant, compassionate curiosity and zero judgment.
So that's you on, this is, you know, so fascinating and right up our alley, which is why we're very excited to have you on the podcast. But is that approach from the financial therapist perspective, that's how you're approaching it? And can you talk a little bit about what differentiates you between a therapist? Like I hear you have a license in family and marriage counseling, mm-hmm. but is there also now a license for financial therapy? Is this like a new world that we are diving into? Mm-hmm. And then my final question is, and how are you getting, what is the end goal for your actual client? Like where to get mm-hmm. to that?
Yeah. Okay. Really good stuff. Okay.
Lots of questions. I apologize. Yes. I don't have to do that many parts, but here we are.
You don't?
I only see two. I gave her three. That's not really fair.
It's okay. That is totally fine. This is so new that it's not necessarily there. There is through the Financial Therapy Association now a certificate program. I already had some training in this, and I think my business background, I'm also a certified financial recovery counselor, and that is through Karen McCall's program. Karen McCall is also one of the founding women who got this connection between money and emotions. She wrote Financial Recovery, which is another one of my spot on go to start with this book kind of thing for people. And so through that, I entered this with already a pretty good foundational understanding, but also an understanding it's important as a financial therapist to understand what is my lane. So I am not a financial advisor. I'm not a financial planner. I don't sell products and I don't help people make investment decisions. But what I do often is help people prepare for their meeting with their financial planner or advisor, because my clients are really burdened with a lot of shame,
yes,
and a lot of judgment. Mm-hmm. There, and which kind of goes to your question, Erin, too, of like, what is the end goal of financial therapy? Often, it really begins to look like a shift in their internal dialogue. There's just less of that, you know, kind of internal, you know, condemnation and judgment, yes, and kind of feeling. And so what happens, especially if, you know, for those who maybe have either experienced this or who are as financial planners or advisors, you know, you meet with them once a year and they say, hey, do these things. What happens often is people don't do those things because, and they were too afraid, too ashamed, too embarrassed to maybe ask, what is a HELOC? You know, what is a mortgage? You know, whatever it is, they feel too embarrassed to ask those questions. So part of financial therapy, as with any therapy, is very much grounded in meeting someone where they are. So we start with hearing, you know, we start out with them telling their story. What was money like growing up? What kind of, you know, beliefs are there? I'll give you a common one. This may help too. Commonly, clients who come into financial therapy have a belief that they are, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes for people who can't see me, that they're bad with money and other people are good with money. And I don't believe that. So we want to dispel that right away. And we want to take both the toxicity out of it and also looking at it as, how is that impacting your decisions? Because if you're bad with money, well, then why log into your account? What's the point? You know, because it's already destruction. Why would I look at it? So just that simple belief leads to behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And other people are good with money, which is one of those things where you look at someone and from the outside, you see them make a money decision. Maybe it's as simple as they say they bought this stock or they bought a house here or whatever. And you decide, well, they're good with money. And we get that. Then you get that black and white thinking, that all or nothing thinking that shuts you down and begins to guide decisions. So financial therapy is the place where you come in. And one of the first things I will often ask is, what did you notice this week in money? Because every day we deal with it. And if there's lots of shame and lots of judgment, then the week was, you know, awful, or it was full of a lot of avoidance, you know, kind of thing. Does that sort of help give you
I mean, I know Maya's like laughing because she can see my excitement in like in this, because this really is the foundation of what we're using for Navit, you know, specifically tying that belief system, like the mood, your mood, what's happening to you externally, and how is that related to your behavior around money and your feelings about your money, your purchases. How you know, there are emotions around purchases, right? Positive, negative.
So many.
And you're trying to kind of, and what we really ascribe to is that belief in your ability to manage it. Like, are you bad with money, mm-hmm. as you say, air quotes? Really, how do we create an infrastructure that gives you basic steps to see that you're actually probably pretty good at it, or even if you aren't, you can learn. And shifting mm-hmm. the mindset and the belief in the core, the kind of identity, you know, Maya talks a lot about, mm-hmm. you don't have to be a professional athlete to identify as an athlete, right? If you're getting up every day, you're training, you're doing her skate skiing, or you're doing mm-hmm. my little Peloton, you know, and but moving towards like this desire to be fit or whatever, to work out, you can identify as an athlete, right? You don't have to have that angle of like, I am, or like from a money management perspective, you know, mm-hmm. I am a stockbroker or I am a, you know, real estate mogul. That means I am an expert, right? It's in the end goal. It's like, by virtue of the fact you're an adult, you're managing your money. So can you identify as a money manager, as an like expert for you and for your own, in your own world?
And I want to ask that question too, is to say like, okay, yeah, we're talking about a motivated consumer, at least in this, mm-hmm. as we're talking through Navit, right? We often say that, right? Where it's somebody that you first need to have that activation point of, I need help or I need to seek out support. So how would I as a regular person mm-hmm. Know that I need to reach out to an expert like yourself, Wendy?
Mm-hmm. Such a good question. Often what will tell you that financial therapy can be helpful is noticing some patterns, noticing some themes. And so one of those would be if I call this the perfection cycle. It's like when you wake up every day and you think today's the day, whatever it is, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. Or I'm going to get out of debt, which, you know, we can't do that in a day. Okay. So, but you know, you're living in that cycle you wake up, you tell yourself a perfection promise. I won't buy anything today, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then by literally about 10:42 that morning, you've blown it. And you think, well, today's shot. So, you know, and then you just blow it all out and you binge or whatever's going on. You buy everything in the cart really quickly because tomorrow you're going to have to do it perfectly. So you'd be like, oh, this is kind of the perfection cycle. So sometimes if that's happening a lot, it's sort of this rise. It's very exhilarating to wake up saying I'm going to be perfect. And it's very despairing to go to bed every night thinking I failed. That person will really benefit from financial therapy, really coming in and looking at what's going on. Where's the perfection story start? Where did it start? You know, that kind of thing. Another type place is if you feel like you are stuck, you feel like, I don't even know. Like if you feel so unorganized, for instance, that you don't know where to start, it can be very overwhelming. And then you can either shift into a lot of maybe negative self-talk or maybe a lot of avoidance. Maybe you just kind of hope for the best and see if it's going to happen kind of feeling. In financial therapy sessions, it's very different than someone might experience in another therapy session because we will actually log into those accounts together often. We'll just start, we'll just go, let's log in, let's pull it up. We'll put it into a tracking system. We'll find one that works for their learning style. I find that to be a big, very key point, and often can be part of the point of conflict between partners is what we really have going on is two learning styles. And it may be one person, and often with money, and you may have thoughts on this too, but I find there's this expectation that if you're good with money, you're therefore good with spreadsheets. That is not really a corollary. Is a corollary? Like, yeah. So we want to look at some of my clients need to put a big piece of paper on the wall and use colors and circles and charts and whatever works. We want to find that. So if you're finding yourself repeating patterns, broken promises, a lot of shame, a lot of negative self-talk, if you're so scared that you can't log into your bank accounts, these are all reasons to reach out to a financial therapist.
I think that's a really profound visual too, is I think we all have had that shock, no matter what your financial situation is of you know, maybe before financial apps, but, you know, going in to type in your login information and like kind of holding your breath. Yeah. I definitely think that that's something that our audience talks a lot about. You know, and I want to talk a little bit more and dive a little bit more deeply into this connection between mental and financial health. You know, it's Mental Health Awareness Month as we're recording. Yes. And there's so many really fascinating academic research coming out and that have come out recently in the last several years to really indicate this kind of perpetual cycle of degrading or disintegrating health around your mental health because of your finances and then kind of vice versa, right? As the cycle continues. And I'd love to kind of get your take on that and if, you know, how you kind of help people move through both really mental health concerns and health issues as well as kind of financial health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are so connected. It's so great that we're able to talk about that here and use this platform to really, first of all, just validate, yeah, that things about money are rarely about money. And I think that's really helpful to normalize and identify so that then we can begin the process of healing whatever's coming up, you know. And so first and foremost, I think just us really validating and saying, yes, there is a huge connection here. There's a big connection between money and emotions. Mm-hmm. The way that I look at this and talk about this is really looking at what's your decision-making like? I call this your decision-making matrix because what you want to notice, and you want to do this with that abundant, compassionate curiosity and zero judgment. You want to notice what is your decision-making matrix going into a financial decision? Because you want to see what's going on. So if you think, like maybe you think, oh, my partner cares about is money, then what is coming up for them? Maybe what they really care about. So then we take the word money out and see how they're going to fill in that blank. And you think, all my partner cares about is security or freedom or right. Okay.
Or and then what is there?
Or yeah, competition. And then what's that about? Looking at it again with a lot of curiosity, maybe they're coming from a place where growing up, maybe every time, I'm going to make up an example. Maybe every time growing up, they saved $20, their parents came in and said, we need this for food. Okay. Okay. It's what happened. We want to look at it with compassion and curiosity and notice maybe they like to be either highly rigid around their savings and hide it, and they don't want to share with anyone else what they've saved. Okay. Neutrality. We don't want to judge it. We just want to notice it. Or maybe they never save because what they have this, like, what's the point? Someone's going to grab it. Again, sometimes they don't know why they're doing what they're doing, but they know that it's important. And then we get anxiety around whatever the behavior is because it feels important. Because a lot of times our money management style is born out of some kind of risk management or risk reduction in life. Once we begin to identify, you know, what are the fears, what are the anxieties, what causes despair, those are all emotions. Then we trace them to the behavior and notice what's coming up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so interesting. You've mentioned it now a few different times of these kind of money memories, like these foundational events that happened in our lives, maybe habitually, that really shaped who we are and how we gravitate or move away from different financial opportunities that are kind of in our midst. And I think that the combination of that with kind of your financial partnership is such a unique thing to unpack and really so important to reach out to professionals like yourself and financial therapists to really help, I think, kind of smooth the transition, especially for a lot of our, like, you know, younger listeners who are just finding themselves in their first real financial partnerships, you know, how to navigate that and don't have it held as a burden. And I think so many young people now think that it's such a burden to integrate a lifestyle in with somebody else's because you do have your own ways in doing things and you think that you're kind of stuck in those. I'd love to talk a little bit about some of these strategies that you employ in, you know, your client or your everyday life to try and manage money. I mean, I think even the healthiest of financial mindsets can be stuck in the rudder, again using the fitness analogy, right? Like, you can have a down day, you're human. So what are some of the things that we can all kind of employ daily to help us live more confident financial lives?
Maya, you said so many good things right there. So firstly, yes, going back into our money memories, I'll just say a little bit more about that too, is so powerful. And you know, often if you've ever seen therapy on a sitcom or something like that, it's like, oh, they're just going to blame mom and dad. But it's really, I like to really reframe that. What we're trying to do is build context. We want to get some context from those money memories as to why, what's going on today. So it's looking at that, not to blame, not to hang hooks, but to notice. And I think that's really important. I have one of the things I offer, it's on my website, is 5 days toward, I can't remember what I called it, finding financial clarity, but it takes you back into some journaling exercises through some of these money memories. What are some of your earliest one? And I have some foundational journaling exercises. We can work out a coupon code for that too. But so it's a really good place to start. And if you're in a partnership, it's a good place to start. Both of you do it separately and then come together and talk about it. It's a really beautiful thing. Barry Tesler, The Art of Money, she has a ton of resources. One of my favorites of hers is How to Have a Money Day. So, and that we may could talk about that in a whole nother episode, but it's really important. One thing that's really, I'll just, as a one thing, when you're trying to talk about money with yourself or a partner, is to have a beginning, middle, and an end. It makes a huge difference because anyone who thinks they're about to dip into a big black hole of money ugliness is going to avoid the heck out of it, whether it's yourself or with a partner. So those pieces are really powerful too, and really helpful. So hopefully that kind of touches on a few of those things. And then where to start? You know, one of the, this is why this is the first thing you'll find on my website is a journaling exercise where you're tracking transactions with thoughts and feelings. And it doesn't even matter yet about the amount. We're not trying to do the math yet, because sometimes the math is what intimidates. So this mm-hmm. is just tracking with a thought and a feeling. And most tracking systems, and you guys have such a great, nice place to add your feelings already and graphics for it. And it excites me. It's so great because it just makes it so natural. But what happens is you want to do it with at least three thoughts and three feelings, because you might be like, well, I bought this shirt today because it was on sale. And, you know, period. If we stop there, we're not going to get to it. So we're going to go down. And I got it because I think I'll look smarter when I'm making my presentation at work. And that helps me feel less scared. And I bought it because, and I bought it today because I know tomorrow my partner is going to ask me what our bank balance is. And I felt nervous and I wanted to hide it. So by adding a few thoughts and feelings, and just writing them down with, again, I hope I've said this a few times, abundant, compassionate curiosity, zero judgment. Really looks at it. Because a lot of times there's a lot of judgment that pops up, a lot of shoulds and you know, that kind of thing. So just starting there can make a huge difference. And then if you're in a partnership, whether it's a business partnership or a life partnership, you both do it and you come together and you discuss it and just notice mm-hmm. what comes up for each other, because it will be different.
I know Erin has a follow-up. See your follow-up.
I do, yeah. And I think probably, you know, not to respect time, but also I think I do want to, because you have this unique angle on the marriage and family counseling and therapy, I want to ask that specific question of what are the kind of key issues you've seen. I mean, if we know that marriage is the number one thing that breaks up, I mean, money is the number one thing that breaks up marriages in this country. Like, what are the kind of themes you've seen and solutions that you've given some of them, but in your practice, like specifically from a marriage perspective, kind of themes you see that come up that create conflict and then kind of solutions that you deploy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think it's really helpful to know that and to notice that. And then what I will do is let's rephrase that question, or let's take the word money out of it. When you say, because you're right, money is named as one of the biggest causes of relationships to break up. And let's ask each couple, take that word money out, because what they're probably looking at is shame, avoidance, fear, poor yes. communication skills,
yes.
how to conflict. Communicate. Your, yes. Yeah. Like, how do you manage conflict? Because
yeah.
money is one of those things that we make the most decisions about. And so mm-hmm. we use different strategies to avoid our decision-making and to look at it and kind of thing. And so that is what the conflict becomes about, is not understanding how to make decisions together as a unit. That's oversimplifying mm-hmm. it, but does that make sense?
No, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. Yeah. I think thinking of it as a partnership, and you know, Maya and mm-hmm. I talk about this a lot, like we are business partners, which is mm-hmm. basically a form of marriage, right? Like the marriage license is basically,
it's a deeper form of marriage yes. for many yeah. people.
It's true. She's like stuck with me for life. But no, the
divorce isn't an option in this case.
Not this far down. We haven't had kids mm-hmm. yet. Mm-hmm. But legally, you know, a marriage license is basically mm-hmm. the same thing as a partnership, a business partnership, yes. right? So it's the business of your marriage when you start to join assets and join, you know, the legal entities that are you and your mm-hmm. your wealth. So yeah, I really always come at this as like, if you can think of it as a partnership that each member is contributing to in their equal way, and then find how each one contributes. Because I think the friends that I see that have struggles, it's that there's a push-pull in who does what in the business mm-hmm. of their marriage or the, you know, money management. And I think, if you start from the premise of let's build
a marriage and a life and a business together as a team, then you're kind of working backwards mm-hmm. on who does what and how you manage it. So it's a great, I love that you're reframing. You're right. Money is not the thing that breaks people up. Their inability or like, you know, miscommunication or desire to manage conflict is probably the thing that really breaks people up.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think the power to identify that, Erin, right? And as mm-hmm. Wendy's alluded to, the power to identify that, to sit down with yourself, your partner, bring awareness and attention to the fact that you might need to talk through some of these things is really mm-hmm. effective, especially as you embark on a new financial journey, whether or not that is entering into a new financial partnership, buying a home, having a child, going to grad school, whatever your new financial inflection point might be. It's probably helpful if you can to reach out to a financial therapist like mm-hmm. Brilliant Wendy here, which I think gives us a wonderful kind of section into our rapid fire round. But before we do, Wendy, would you like to tell everybody how to find you, how they can reach out? I'm sure we have a million different audience members who are going to be contacting you after I've so poignantly mm-hmm. brought up the fact that they need to. Where can we all reach you? And we'll add it to the show notes too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can be found at wendywrightcounseling.com. I have just recently, I'm also starting to build a team of financial therapists, and that will be called financialtherapysolutions.com, which will just, maybe by the time this is out, that will actually be live, to have more, because I love this work. It is life-changing. And one of the coolest parts about it is often in one of the first few sessions, many of my clients will just tear up and just be like, I never knew there was a place I could just talk about money like this. And so everyone right now who's holding their breath, wishing they had a place to talk about money, the place exists now. We're, you know, it's here and we can do this. There's different resources on my website, my email list. I usually try to, you know, give a note of a great podcast when I send out a newsletter, things like that. So we'll be sharing this podcast that way and other resources as they come online. Yeah.
Well, we are so honored to have you joining us here today, Wendy. It is certainly, hopefully, it is not the last time we have you on the show. I'm sure
I love
picking your brain now, left, right, and center. Mm. And to conclude, just like we do every episode, we love to ask our guests a bit of a rapid fire. These are easy, quick questions, just like mm-hmm. signing up for Navit. So if you haven't gone to sign up for Navit, you can download it from any app store. So Wendy, are you ready?
I am ready. Bring it.
Okay. Question number one, what money stereotype do you think society must overcome?
You know, I'm going to go with what we just talked about, that people are bad or good with money. That I think that's a myth. And I think it's really good to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we could do an entire segment on the stereotypes the three of us want to combat.
Yes. There's also scarcity and abundance. Like those are other big too, because scarcity is a lot about there's not enough, but abundance, that is also can often be about avoidance. And so it can be more of a stereotype than a reality. And so, yeah, we could talk a lot more about that too.
I've got a whole list of things we're going to talk about on future episodes now. But number two, how do you define a healthy money mindset?
One that's full of abundant, compassionate curiosity and zero judgment.
Couldn't have said it better. And lastly, when was the last time you nabbed something financially and how did you do it?
Really navigated a financial journey or financial hardship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been so many. I think one of the biggest ones that I had that might really help encourage a lot of people, two big ones. Getting divorced was a financial devastation, and also with no warning, which is often how divorce happens. No warning whatsoever. So, you know, my high credit score went down to the 500s. My net worth, I felt like I had just graduated from college. It was like building from scratch. But it happened, you know, with time and support and doing my own money work. help me get mm-hmm. through it. And some of that was naming thoughts and feelings. And so that was a big one. And then, you know, starting another business, this financial therapy private practice was another big one too, that having a written business plan made a big difference, and things like that too. And that's part of what I help other therapists do, sort of setting up the business part of therapy, which is scary for a lot of therapists. I just happen to also have a business degree. So to me, it was not as scary, but I still got support. Support makes a big difference.
It really
makes
a big
difference.
Like what
you guys offer with Navid is very supportive. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. We think that, you know, we say discussion, attention, and practice are the three mm-hmm. key things you need for healthy financial habits and really to foster that well-being. So Wendy Wright, thank you so much for joining us on another episode of the Navit Podcast. We cannot wait to have you back and to talk all things abundance, partnerships, and all of the other stereotypes that we want to debunk here at Navit. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening.
Thanks, Wendy. Yeah, thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Navit Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Navit. That's LetsNavit. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
let's Navit!